Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, everyone. Happy holidays. I know there's no regular show this week, however, I decided why not just throw you guys something a little extra. Over on our Patreon, we do a show called Puckle Chit Chat where I sit down with one of the co-hosts, and I figured I'd give you guys a taste of that. So please enjoy this episode where I talk with Seth about everything from Pokemon cards to his carnivorous plants. If you enjoy it, feel free to go over to Patreon at patreon.com/pucklepodcast and you can get more of those. We've done some with Whimsicott, Claude, and it's sure to have more, one a month. Not including the Patreon hangout episodes. So yeah, I appreciate if you guys check it out. Until then though, guys, I am Trainer Thatch and happy holidays. Welcome to the first ever Puckle's interview with a co-host. Yeah, that sounds like a show name. I am
name
Thatch.
Pending.
Name pending. I mean, it might have a different name when it gets posted later this week or something. But I am Thatch, as you should all know, because this is a Patreon-only podcast. And thank you to all of you listening to this. This is a show. It's going to be a little bit different. This is a Patreon-exclusive show where we're going to take each of your co-hosts and we're going to just chit and chat with them and ask them about themselves. You hear me every week, but you don't get to hear these guys every week. And we just want to know more about you because they want to intrude onto your life, as do I.
Oh, well, shucks.
To be fair, the list of questions I have prepared, I feel like I know most of the answers for most of you. So
maybe
we're going to find out. Maybe you can make it a really cool story and I can listen. So we're going to kick things off really nice and simple, very generic for a Pokemon podcast, Seth.
Heck yeah.
We have Seth Violet this week, by the way.
Hello. But, I was wondering if
I
you
forgot,
would get to that part.
We have Seth Violet, who's, I don't know, when did you become a co-host? Like, what year was it? Because I don't remember. It's all blurred together at this point. I don't remember.
I think I started listening to the show in 2017, because that was back when I was Boy Scouts.
That sounds
and
very reasonable.
I needed something in the car, and I think my first episode listening was the Sun and TCG. TCG cast set review.
That's
and,
fun.
Then I just kind of stuck around, and then I think it happened at some point, not too long after we ended up doing the Game Corner episode together, I think.
Yeah, well, that's how we used to test people, by the, like, in
yeah.
all honesty, is that's how we used to, like, pull people from Patreon or from the community and have them on one of those sideshows, and that was a very good way to test people for on-air personality, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it was me and you versus Bosifus and Linian.
Yeah, that sounds very reasonable. I think you guys also, like, you and Linian both got picked out specifically as well for that, probably, when we did it, because you two were very active in the community at the time. And I mean, it's just easier to see people when they're doing that, and if they're very positive while they're doing it, it's just like, yeah, these guys could be good. And then on top of that, like, I don't want to sound like egotistical or anything, but we use it as just like if you're active in the community and you're talking to me, it's much easier for me to know that we might mesh well on the show, right?
Exactly. Yeah. It gives you multiple interactions to kind of figure out who this person is and stuff. So
exactly.
Not egotistical or anything like that.
Yeah.
You're running a program. You're running a business.
Yeah. To some extent. If I'm running a business, I'm not a very good businessman, right? There are multiple decisions I think about every day where I'm like, I'm not doing this optimally, very, very much so. Like, and I'm aware of it. But yes, this is supposed to be about you, not about the podcast or me. But I do want to ask you questions because, I mean, that is part of a question, but we'll talk to you about it a little bit later.
Heck yeah.
But this is going to be very generic, very easy. You're roughly my age, I think. I think we're almost the same age. We talk about this every time we meet in person, and then I always forget.
Yeah, I think we're like a couple months off each other.
Yeah, I think that's about it, yeah. And so I want to know, what was your entry point into Pokemon?
Why did you get there? What hooked you back then too? Because like I assume we're all nerds, and especially about Pokemon, since that's why we're here.
What?
Right. And I was just wondering what hooked you back then, like back in the day.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. It's not that elaborate of a story, honestly. One holiday, I suppose it was either Christmas or my birthday, my mom had gotten a bundle pack from Costco of the Game Boy Color plus accessory packs plus a Pokemon game.
Oh, that's right.
Didn't know what Pokemon was at the time. And that was Blue that I started with. And I remember a couple things specifically. Like, I thought that, oh, okay, that's Blastoise on the front, so I guess I have to pick the Squirtle. Like, that's most appropriate.
That's true. I wonder how many people chose Blastoise or Charizard just based on the fact that they owned that version. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's definitely how my kid brain worked, too.
Yeah. Like, oh, I guess this will be the lucky one this time. Very smart. But, yeah, so I did. That was where I started. I can't figure out what year that was, because I don't know when our Costco opened up.
Yeah. We have to look it up now.
I feel like if it was on the Game Boy Color, it was a couple years maybe, or a year after it came out here. But it might have been right at the time. I don't know.
Oh, no, the Game Boy Color came out before Pokemon.
Did it? Okay.
Yes.
I didn't know for sure.
I only know this because I got my Game Boy Color before Pokemon came out. And mostly because it was one of those things like all the kids are getting video games and I kind of want to join in on this because video games seem really cool. And so yeah. My parents ended up buying me a Game Boy Color after I bugged them about it for a very long time. I later found out that my dad was just like holding out on me too, because my dad actually has like, my dad bought this like when I was a kid and I was asking for a Game Boy for like the longest time. Before I did it, he bought a Game Boy Color Donkey Kong Country dual pack combo. And he's just held it. It's still like perfectly wrapped in everything. He's just held it. And I told him, I'm like, you know, you should just sell that, right? Like, it's probably worth a couple thousand dollars, like as a bundle.
Yeah.
As is. So yeah, he just bought that and just never told me. And he's just like holding it. And I was just like, so weird. It's so weird. He's gonna hold that till he dies and I'm gonna find it and sell it.
Heck yeah. Or yeah. Put it on display at that point.
Yeah, right. It's a piece of video game history. But yeah, no, the Game Boy Color came out just before Pokemon, because I remember getting it. Okay. And then I bought Pokemon a couple weeks after it came out, only because of the box art, because back when you were a kid, you just looked at box art.
Yeah.
And that's how you bought video games.
Big monster. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I've always kind of panicked about that internally, just a teeny tiny bit, because I'm like, I've been with Pokemon since the very beginning, like blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And, like, part of me worried that I haven't.
Well, it might be 98, 99, somewhere in there, right?
So. Yeah. Maybe like halfway through the red blue cycle. But yeah, since the beginning is when I kind of got into it, and I just never really ever stopped. I kind of had a little bit of a like less overall time with it, I guess, in Gen 2 a little bit. I don't know. You know, fourth grade was hard. the big resurgence came in Gen 3, both because I liked the Game Boy Advance more than the Color, and the colors in Ruby, Sapphire, Emerald, and honestly, the art styles really just grabbed me back, because
yeah.
I have said it several times. I hate the original art for a lot of the Pokemon, that washed out watercolor. That almost turned me off of the entire franchise for a little bit.
Man, I really like that art, actually. Like the old Sigamari art. It's nostalgic at this point. I think the ones I like better are probably the Gen 3, Gen 4, even like the redos. They did for the remakes.
That was one thing I remember waiting around for, like in Heart Gold and Soul Silver when that was coming out, and we hadn't gotten new Sugimori art for the Gen 2 guys that hadn't been around. I remember waiting for those official arts to come out and just being like, oh, so that's what it's supposed to look like. Or, oh, that's much better than the original art.
Yeah.
And I actually like this one now. Like,
yeah, I'm pretty nostalgic for that. Okay, so I'm going to circle back just a little bit, because I have a very minor question. Game Boy Advance, which one's your favorite?
I only had one.
There's like so many of them.
The one that I originally had is the like OG purple one.
Yeah, the fat one.
And I remember because I saved up allowance money.
Yeah.
And that's the one I had pretty much all through the cycle.
Mm-hmm.
Until the DS came out, which I also saved. And it was perfect timing, because my Advance started kind of crapping a bit. But right at the end, like, cartridge wouldn't work every single time. So I
had to
put it in a few times to get it going, and then the DS came along, and it's like, oh, thank goodness, I can.
Yeah,
we're migrating to a new system. I can survive. But my favorite advanced system is the Game Boy Micro.
It's cute. I don't know that I would
the
ever buy
one. The itty bitty one.
Yeah, I don't know that I would
love that thing.
I don't know. Like, as in the modern age where I still play with Game Boy Advances.
Yeah.
This is honestly what got me into video game modding to begin with, like console modding, was mm-hmm. that I love playing on OG hardware whenever I can.
That's fair. Yeah.
Just because OG hardware just, it feels better. The game runs the way it's supposed to, well. And so, I don't have big hands. Like, you've met me. My hands aren't large. They're not giant.
Yeah.
But I can't hold like the Game Boy Advance SP very comfortably because it's so tiny.
Okay.
And so what really got me into it, because the screen on the Game Boy Advance SP is so much better, is you can take the screen from a Game Boy Advance and, well, not anymore. Now you buy like an LG LCD screen and you slap it in the Game Boy Advance. But the original mod was you take a screen from a Game Boy Advance SP and you slap it into a Game Boy Advance.
Okay.
And then you've got the best of both worlds.
That makes sense.
Also a headphone jack.
Yeah. I love the Micro though, because I would have that thing in my pocket through high school. And
I believe that.
Just pull that out and it looked like a McDonald's toy. No one really took it seriously. Like, oh, he's just got like a calculator in the back. No, I was playing Pokemon.
No, I totally believe
or
that.
Or Sonic Battle or some other Game Boy Advance game. That was the other one that sucked up a lot of time was Sonic Battle.
Sonic, I know which one you're talking. Is that
Battle.
Which one's Sonic Battle?
It's the one where you're playing as Emerald, a little robot that has to absorb all the Chaos Emeralds, and you slowly learn moves as you battle the other Sonic characters.
Oh, man, I have never played this one, actually.
Oh, it's good. It's really fun. And my brother and I were both really into that one, and we would pass the game back and forth to each other and, you know, play on our own little saves. It was one of our favorites all the time. I love that stupid game.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I've never played Sonic Battle. The only Sonic game I played on Game Boy Advance was the one that would connect to Sonic Adventure Battle 2 on GameCube.
Oh, yeah.
I think I still have the copy somewhere, but that was the only one, mostly because of the Chao. I was really into the Chao Garden. Like, yeah. Why
I never
else
got
did
into
you play
that too much.
I don't blame you.
GameCube, though. That's part of the reason that
I also don't blame you.
Yeah.
Also don't blame you on that one. Well, honestly, no. I feel like the GameCube at the time was a console that everybody skipped because they're just like, oh, it's Nintendo. It's going to be meh. And then,
it was
the PS2.
It was less that and just more like console allocation with my parents. It wasn't like a thing. It was just like, oh, we've got the computer. We can play our putt-putt games. We've got
our
respective Game Boy Advances. We can play our games there each. And the three of us, me and my two siblings, all played on the PS2, and we absolutely
PS2.
Played the crap out of Spyro the Dragon. That was our game.
Yeah, PS2 like won that gen, I think. Just hard.
Yeah.
It was mostly because it was a DVD player, I think. It just blew it out of the water. That's why. It just blew it out of the water. Back in the day when DVD players were just becoming a thing.
Yeah. When Spyro Reignited came out, I was so and it came out like... When it came out, I think it released on my birthday, so it was like, this is a sign, this is for me.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, I never played a Spyro game.
Oh, dude, you should get reignited. It's fun.
Yeah, throughout my youth, I was always a Nintendo kid. I never bought anything else. So.
I think they just had their 25th anniversary not too long ago. Mm. That was all over Twitter. I think it was the 12th. No, yeah, it was. It was yesterday.
Yesterday. Oh my gosh.
Yeah, that was their 25th anniversary.
Oh my gosh.
As of recording. they know.
Yeah, now they know our secrets. Oh man. It ruins the immersion.
But yeah, Spyro the Dragon.
Spyro.
That's another big one that I did.
Man. Yeah, I didn't know anything about I don't know. I never played anything back then like that. I don't know. I was obviously like very obsessed with Pokemon, so
yeah.
I didn't play much else. All right, so I'm gonna shift gears like a little bit. We're still talking Pokemon-ish questions.
You bet.
But we already talked about like how you got to Puckle and everything else, or like how when you started and everything. But I guess the question is like, what kept you around? Like, what made you go from listening to a TCG cast episode about the Sun and Moon base set? Which actually Sun and Moon was a fun era. Never mind, Sun and Moon was
it kind of was.
And what made you go from listening to that and then being like, well, one, I'm going to go listen to the main show, and then who's this host that I'm looking for? Jushiro. And then moving on, and then being like, you know what? It's good enough to come to like, I get, at the time we had a Discord, yeah. So we had Discord by then.
Yeah, I think you had just made the Discord.
Yeah, I think we made Discord either early 2017 or late 2016.
Yeah, because I think you were pushing people at the end of episodes to go to the Discord instead of chat window.
Yeah, it was terrible because we used to use this horrible chat box. And I was looking for the longest time because it was before Discord came about. I was looking for a chat box that would also work on your phone. Because the other one would, but it was really crappy to work on your phone. And thankfully, I believe Gator found it. Gator's like, well, we should just make a Discord. And I'm like, what is that? And he shows me this. I'm like, this is literally what I've been looking for years.
This is it. This is
what I've been looking for.
I think
y'all
were my first Discord server, too. So.
Oh, man. How many Discord servers are there now? Because I'm looking at mine right now, and there's definitely more than one.
This is
15, 16, 17, 18, welcome to the show, Seth Counts. If you count
31 different servers. 30,
oh my God. I think I'm actually really close to you.
Some of them are ones that, you know, I made with my IRL friends, where this is where we talk about just hopping on League of Legends together. This is where we coordinate my buddy's D&D campaign. This is where my D&D campaign lived, you know, things.
Yeah, I've got like three or four of those. So
I have a folder full of dead Discords.
Yeah, I have something similar. Okay, yeah, but so what made you go to Discord? Like what made you want to do that? I guess
is
the question.
I wanted to talk to.
That's fair.
Like going from just listening to like, oh, we've got this thing where you can talk to us all the time. Like I wanted to talk to people about that's what you do.
Right? That's true. You're not wrong, though.
You know, ended up in the Discord, was just kind of active as a person there, and you know, step by step. Influence point by influence point. Now I'm here. So that's kind of really. It's just kind of how it happened. And
you never thought you'd be here.
I like talking. I am considered by many a pretty good talker or communicator.
Yes.
So it was kind of a natural progression for me anyway. That I ended up talking a lot. That's how it went.
No, it's like. I completely understand. I mean, you are very good at talking, which is why you're on the show. But, oh, man. Okay, so, I mean, I think that's pretty much all about Puckle, because I don't want to, like, toot our own horn or anything and be like, oh, look how cool we are.
I mean, it is good to get the story how I got.
Yeah. But, the way I know you and the way maybe people know you now, well, maybe not, actually, because we just ended Battlecast and everything, is that you're, like, really big into the TCG, right? Well, not as much as Thatch ruins the show by talking about the TCG. All the time.
You voice it. I just
took a while to voice it, right? Because
I absorb all the information and spout it out when I have the moment. You get to talk about it more frequently than
That's true. That's true. I feel like it's not very apparent if you just listen to Seth on the show.
Right.
Knowing you because we hang out outside the show, obviously, in more ways than one, right? Is that I very much know that you're very much into the Pokemon TCG, and which isn't a bad thing because I am too, and especially right now, like more so. Once the video game puts OU back on cart in a reasonable fashion, I will go back to probably playing on cart a little bit. But it's getting there. Like they almost made it, but they. So I just wanted to know, like, when did you actually get into the TCG? How long have you been playing like locals and? When did your aspiration to potentially qualify for Worlds like really kick in?
Yeah, totally. That one was when I had moved out of my parents' place in mid-2016 and was doing the Boy Scout job. Mm-hmm. I was starting to just kind of figure out hobbies that I could completely own that they might have been like, oh, that's a stupid hobby.
Yeah.
When I was at home there watch. And, you know, I was an adult at the time, but it still was just like, what is the word? Where they like not oppressive. That's too.
They're not oppressive.
Aggressive of a word, but
they would definitely. Yeah, they would definitely
they
smother
the hobby.
Yeah, they would definitely not encourage it, right?
Yeah, not encourage it and just be like, oh, that's that silly thing that. But when I got out of the house and could kind of do what I wanted to, I got back into the TCG. Looking into it, I had made a deck for myself in like 2010, 2011, a really crappy Salamence deck because I really liked Salamence, and I found a list and I slowly acquired the cards for it because there was a TCG player back then.
We talked about this back in Fort Wayne. I remember you talking to me about
this. And then the one that got me back in 2016 was building a Scizor, Mega Scizor EX deck that was real fun. It was that, and the Scizor had an attack that was something like it does whatever, 110, 120 damage, and you discard a special or a tool from something. Something like that. It was annoying. And you'd pair it with Garbodor that turns off all abilities. And I just, you know, slowly built up those cards, found TCG Online, started putting them there, worked my way on that. And that was actually what prompted me to be kind of looking for new information. Because one thing about me is when I get into something, I kind of want to know a lot about it. I really dive deep in an interest when I...
Hyperfocus.
I want to absorb all the information. And, yeah, hyperfocus and hyper-focus. Be like, have a good repository of things about it. And that's just natural for me. And so I started looking for podcasts to listen to while I was driving around, which was really often for my Boy Scout job at the time. I was doing a lot of driving, and podcasts were perfect for that. And I listened to a couple. I wasn't really hooked by them. And somehow the TCG cast hooked me. And I think it was the same feed at that time too. So just it by subscribing was, to that one, I got the rest of everything.
Yeah, back then we used to have them all in the same feed, and then we decided they got too cluttered.
Mm-hmm. And then went back.
And then we regressed even further.
Exactly. But yeah, so that's I guess that was how I got into the TCG was just kind of there. And then, you know, discovering at the comic book shop that I saw I could buy a card from, oh, it's just down the street, let me zip in and get something. Oh, what are those guys doing in the back? They're playing Pokemon cards? Oh, yeah, we do that every Tuesday. All right, well, I guess I'll come here on Tuesdays. Things like that. And getting into the scene, oh, there's this regional, it's where a lot of people go to play. Oh, I guess I'll go do one of those. Oh, you can get Worlds qualification. Oh, I guess I might as well have a goal, you know.
Yeah.
Step by step, that's kind of how I got there.
How do you feel about those 600 points this year?
I am daunted, but number one, with locals being back, I'm not as daunted. Like, you don't have to get them from regionals. And, I mean, all I have to do is win one, right? And then I just have the invite?
Yeah. Easy.
Ignore the fact that I've never made day two yet, but easy.
Well, did you see the guy who got number two at Pittsburgh, man? He'd only been getting like top 32s, top 64s, and then he got top two at Pittsburgh.
Mm-hmm.
He just like turned the gas on, man. That's all it takes. It takes like one good break, I feel like.
My first step is to survive to day two. That's step one. But yeah, I mean, that's kind of just the progression there. And
mm-hmm. That's good. I was just interested because I never heard like the full story.
Totally.
So, okay. So we're going to get into some meat and potatoes. This is how I originally imagined these kinds of shows. But I feel like getting to know you on the Pokemon side is also very good, but, I want you to pick. Okay. So we're going to limit it a little bit, but honestly, I'll be more interested even if you list more than one thing. We're a Pokemon podcast, so we always talk about Pokemon. But I know you as a person, and I know you have multiple interests, not just Pokemon. And so I would love for you to just like talk to me about any of your other interests, and I would love to learn about them. I know there's like the carnivorous plants, but I don't know much more other than you have 72 billion of them in your house.
Yeah. I think that's probably the one I'll do.
I assumed
at least one of them.
Yeah. I assume. Go ahead. Tell me, why do you have all these plants, and why are you interested in having victory bells in your house? And
let me
know.
Check my note. I keep a Google note of my
how many you have. So do you breed them too, or like is it just do you just buy them?
I don't do that.
Okay.
Right now I buy them, and I attempted to divide them last year, but I think that combined with the really ugly cold snap that we had that I did not prepare them for, wiped out a lot of what was on this list, and I have not gone through since January because I've been foolishly optimistic that they just kind of snap back, and I didn't want to count them out yet until like they all go. But at the time, as of January 25th of this year, 2023, I had 93 separate plants of 53 different species.
Okay, and I guess the question is why.
I am really into plants. Like, if you lose me in a hardware store, go to the gardening section, and that's where you'll find me 9 times out of 10.
Mm-hmm.
That or the clearance, you know, one of those two.
The tools are really cool. I like tools.
I love shopping. At Dragon Con, I walked around the vendor hall for 7.5 hours.
I believe that.
I am a shopper, and I was trained from very young by my mother, who is a professional shopper in a sense. We stopped by the mall on the way home from the hospital. I am not joking. That is
no,
a
I believe
true
you.
Statement.
I believe you.
There was a reason. I think we had to pick up my dad's suit that was being fixed because he had a work thing. But, you know, without that context, that is a funny sentence.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm a big shopper. I've always liked plants, and from really young, you know how they always at like Home Depot in summertime or something like that, they've always got one of those plastic little terrariums with like the man-eater butt plant.
Yeah.
This one will solve all your bug problems and all that kind of garbage. Just keep it in here and keep it away from light and all this kind of stuff and blah, 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 blah. I would get those kind of on an annual basis because I was like, this year I'll make it live. This year it'll work. These are so cool. Did you know that Venus flytraps can count? Things like that. And, you know, if I can know a trivia fact about something, I'm going to know it. And that's something about Venus flytraps. They're one of the only plants that we know of that can straight up count. So, you know, trivia facts like that and just a cool plant. I have always loved them.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, terrible things happen when you become an adult with adult money and no
yes.
one to tell you no.
I'm very aware.
And so 5 or so carnivorous plants quickly became 93. That is basically what happened. And, you know, as I learned more and I got them to succeed, which was the other big thing, like the Venus flytraps I had when I kind of had just a couple and just put them in a pot and did a lot of intense research to figure out, okay, these things are going to live this year. How do I do it? And they did. I was empowered. It's like, okay, one down. Now let's see if I can get this pitcher plant to live alongside it. Things like that. And, you know, more and more information, more and more different species of carnivorous plant became, okay, I've got a little bog pot on my back porch that's doing great. The plants in there are all really happy. Let's add a couple more pots. And so I got a couple more pots, and there were suddenly 4 bog pots on my back porch that were all really happy. So it's like, okay, that's the outdoor ones. That's the perennials that are native to this like area
mm-hmm.
geographically and can live outside. So let's try my hand at some of the ones that have to live inside, because I also, in addition to Venus flytraps, there was these tropical pitcher plants. The ones on the vines, the victory bells, for lack of a better word, that one time a plant nursery had near my house when I was growing up, and I got it, and I kept that sucker alive for a couple of years indoors, but it never made a pitcher when I was growing up.
Oh, no.
And eventually it finally died out, probably because of mineral buildup in the soil had made it toxic, and it finally just puked out on me. But it never made a pitcher, and I could never figure out why, and it bothered me. So I found one again at the nursery, and it's like, okay, now experiment number 2. Let's see if I can get this thing to live. And I did. It produces pitchers. So, okay, let's make it a little harder. So let's get a different variety that's a little harder to grow. And there are currently, these ones all did really successfully. Inside my house, there are like 28 separate plants. A lot of them are cuttings of others,
mm-hmm.
but 28 separate ones, pretty much all of which are very successful unless I forget to water them for a little bit, which has happened to or, you know, just a cutting didn't take, it didn't root. That happens. You have a failure rate built in when you do the whole cutting thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I mean, that's it, just kind of kept evolving, and as I was successful with one, it just built on itself to the point that right after I had started taking Adderall, I decided that, you know what, this one area of my yard is really ugly. I'm gonna make it not ugly. You know what would be great there? A bog full of carnivorous plants.
You're the only person that would say this.
I had seen a really cool picture on Reddit in the carnivorous plant subreddit of some, you know, pictures that some people had done in their yard of a built-in bog thing. They were beautiful. You know, just a dug-in garden thing, and the plants just happened to be carnivorous. And it was gorgeous. And yeah. So I, you know, came up with designs in my head, went to Home Depot when they had a clearance on pond supplies in winter, and made my bog garden that, if I do the mental math, 35, 35, 40, and I would say like 10, so 40, 40, 80, 31, 20, like 140 gallons total of bog.
Oh my, wait, so like you just, wait, you, how do you buy bog? Like, how does that work?
Yeah, that's a easy one. I just got those big, like, black pond liners that you can see.
Yeah, yeah.
For making a koi pond. I drilled a few holes at a certain level in it so the water wouldn't drown things. It would get to a certain point and still be kind of boggy.
I know what you mean. But
not, yeah. Like drainage holes 3/4 of the way up.
It's like having the hole at the bottom of the pot, right?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. But 3/4 of the way up instead of...
Mm-hmm.
And I did that. I dug giant holes. I put those pond liners in the giant holes, so the top of them were just barely above surface level, and filled them with the special soil that has to be really inert for carnivorous plants, because most of the time they cannot really handle a lot of nutrients or anything in the water. Their roots are mainly to hold them in place and absorb water. They can't really do anything else with them in most cases.
That makes sense, right?
Because some species don't even have, like, the enzymes are necessary to pull nutrients up through their...
Well, that's because they're getting all the nutrients from the things they're eating. That's why they're carnivorous, right? Like,
exactly. They evolved to become carnivorous because the soil and everything is so washed out and replaced with water all the time. There's no nutrients to absorb.
That checks out.
So any nutrients will, and nutrient buildup especially, minerals, things like that, will end up eventually killing them. So you have to keep the soil very segregated from whatever is around the area. That's why there's the pond liners, so they don't intermix. And no nutrient spillover will increase the toxicity of the soil for the plant. And I've checked the PPM of my water with a, what is that thing called? Hydrometer.
Yep.
And it's in an acceptable range that it won't cause much mineral buildup, and I've put filters on things, so yeah, they're happy for the most part, other than that one really bad ugly cold snap that I think killed off a lot of them. When I was doing the transplanting from my little pots into the big bog garden, most of those rhizomes were already real gushy, so it wasn't me. It was the weather, but I could have done more to keep them alive. I mean, it's so mad.
It's fine. It's like part of the experience, it sounds like, though, because you're just trying to learn how to make them stay alive. Like, that's the hobby.
Exactly. Yeah. My saddest part is one of the pictures that I had. It was from one vendor specifically. It was Sarracenia Northwest was who I got this one from. It was Sarracenia rubra rubra. That was the name. They advertised on their website that this one is crazy for yellow jackets.
Oh.
And like we look down the pictures of these ones, and there's yellow jackets in all of them. And gosh darn if they weren't right. Those suckers were incredibly successful. They had a huge rhizome when I went to transplant it.
Mm-hmm.
And every one of those pictures had 4 or 5 yellow jackets in it when I cut them down end of the season when they when it goes dormant. It was insane. And they were probably 100 little, they were smallish, like maybe 6 to 8 inches long. But every one of them had 3 or 4 yellow jackets in there.
Oh my gosh. That sounds so
insane.
Pleasant.
Yeah. It was crazy. I love it. It was so fun. And I got these Venus flytraps from Disney World. I have no idea what variety they are, if they even have a variety, so I nicknamed them Pandoran Magic because I got them from the Pandora area of Disney World. And they just were so successful. They were huge. And they just kept going. And yeah, they didn't survive that really ugly cold spell where it went from like mid-40s down to teens overnight.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that done did them in.
Yeah, I believe that.
But yeah, that's the carnivorous plant thing, and like they're real successful. I know some people ask me all the time in chat, like, how they doing. Well, who was it that we had on the show? Was it Mark who was real curious?
Yes, Mark was. Mark was absolutely.
And I sent him a bunch of pictures in our like coordinating the show chat of yes. like, here's what it looks like right now. It's, it's going crazy. I'm going to a sale on Saturday this week, actually.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, someone is selling a lot of carnivorous plants this weekend, and I'm really hyped to go to it.
Yeah.
Replace some of my poor guys.
Poor guys. Yeah, that's interesting. I've heard most of this before, but...
yeah.
Not all at once, I guess. It's just because we talk so often.
And, you put it all together over, you know, you hear this tidbit here, exactly. this tidbit there.
Well, that's how friendships work, right? So
exactly.
Usually don't interview people partially, like this.
It was partially this love of carnivorous plants that got me into Yu-Gi-Oh!
Yeah, I know about this. Continue, though.
Yeah. And Shamu had been trying to get me into it for a while, and I was talking about my carnivorous plant collection one day, and he's like, you know, there's a whole thing called predaplants, and they're actually kind of good, right? I was like, sign me up. What do I need to do? What are these things? And now my two decks mainly are Trap Tricks and predaplants, which are two different types of carnivorous plants. I'm the only one on these like YouTube Yu-Gi-Oh videos where they're going over the decks. People have all sorts of weird ways to pronounce some of these things, and I'm sitting there like, that's not how you pronounce it. It's the species name. Like, there's one Australian pitcher plant that's species, you know, genus species name is Cephalotus follicularis.
Yes.
And there's a frog Yu-Gi-Oh card that is that Australian pitcher plant, and its name is Bufalicula. And it, like, predaplant Bufalicula, which is Bufo, the genus or something name for frogs, and Licula, which is Follicula, the Cephalotus, the Australian pitcher plant. Or like the one of the newer ones from the Trap Trick structure deck, the Butterwort line of plants, the ones that are basically fly paper. They're mainly from like Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Those are called Pinguicula. And the Trap Tricks one is Trap Tricks Pinguicula.
Interesting.
The amount of different pronunciations I've seen for Pinguicula is insane. I can't even begin to mispronounce them because my brain corrects it before I can remember how they even did it. It's so bad. But yeah, that's what got me into Yu-Gi-Oh, which, you know,
I believe it
eventually got me into just other card games than Pokemon, which led to the whole Magic thing. But that was also
this has all been within like a year, because I know when this started.
Yeah,
I know when this all started. So this is all within a year.
Yeah. Adult money's scary. That's
you tell me about
that's
it.
That's how
man.
It goes.
It's horrible. Yeah. It's horrible. I spend so much money. Well, I have like a lot of smaller hobbies, but yeah.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah.
The other thing that I guess I can mention, other than carnivorous plants, that I'm big into, that I think you know.
Yeah.
Is the Lord of the Rings obsession.
Yes, I'm very aware of this. Why is this?
Yes, you are.
I'm very aware of this. Lord, said Milo, with your piece of land.
Well, that and also just being able
to... Yes, I know. You can, like... yes, continue. Sorry, I don't mean to cut you off.
You're fine. Don't worry. I really like Lord of the Rings, kind of always have. My mom and I have a little bit of a ongoing argument of whose series of books are better. Was it C.S. Lewis or Tolkien?
Tolkien.
I am obviously correct that it's Tolkien.
Lord of the Rings
doesn't just have Santa in it. Like,
I don't know that you're obviously correct. I don't even. This is an argument that people have, or is it just like you and your mom?
My mom likes C.S. Lewis and Narnia.
I can understand that to some extent, but like, I think Tolkien is definitely better high fantasy than Narnia.
Mm-hmm. That's just an opinion though. But I always liked Tolkien. I knew enough about it, and then I got really into it when I kind of had the ability to comprehend a lot of the bigger story that he wrote alongside just like, these are two hobbits and they take a ring to a mountain. Like, this is God. He made these people and they sang the world into existence. And this one guy who's kind of a little jerk sang off key on purpose just to sow evil in the world. His name was Melkor. He's Sauron's boss. Like,
yeah,
that kind of level.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of fantasy stuff nowadays, too. I mean, because Tolkien definitely laid the groundwork for that.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, I know you're into it too, but the like the Stormlight Archive does that.
Yeah.
I mean, just the Cosmere in general. Just the Cosmere in general does that.
Yeah, it does. Somewhere Linian's ears perked up. Just, huh,
yeah, I know. Well, he didn't realize I was reading it, and I told him a couple months ago that I was reading it, and he's just like, "Oh, we need to talk." And I'm like, "Yeah, I mean, we don't have to talk. Like, I can read the books, and I know what's going
Please
on."
Please no.
But I do understand what's happening.
Yeah, that's another big one that I like. But yeah, I can. One of the funniest things that I like to have is I can write in Tengwar.
Yep,
I do this. Elvish from Lord of the Rings stuff.
I did know this
and
about you.
Two of my favorite things about that, well, outside, it's just fun to do.
How's your script
writing?
So your script writing for that is very good? Is it?
It's flowy enough that I can make it look pretty dang good, even if I'm not satisfied with where I put my vowels every time. But
So with that language, so I'm not entirely familiar with how that language works.
Uh-huh.
So I'm going to be a little do you transliterate, or would you don't have to transliterate because I guess it's its own language, right? So it's got its own words. So I guess you wouldn't transliterate.
Not exactly.
But
not exactly. I am using the Tengwar alphabet to write English words.
So you are transliterating. You're not translating.
Yes.
You're transliterating. Okay. Understandable.
Yes.
Understood. Yeah. Okay. I used to
be able
to do that.
Still English, and there are rules to the language for writing it in English mode.
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to like the ring inscription. If you try to read the ring inscription like you would read English mode, it's not the same.
Yeah, because it's an elfish.
Or if you try to read other things like some of the cards from the Lord of the Rings magic set, they paid attention and some of those are written in Quenya mode and some of those are written in Sindar mode, which is appropriate depending on the card. And when I was trying to read the elvish on some of them, I got really confused because I was reading it in the wrong mode. And I got my letters backwards.
Yeah. The way magic... go ahead. Yeah.
I was just going to say, pretty much all it is like, instead of reading it in a straight line, you kind of read it in an up-down zigzag, where the little marks above... the marks on the upper half are the vowels, and the marks on the lower half are the consonants, for the most part.
Yeah. So. Magic's been doing that a lot, where they've been taking properties and turning them into cards.
Yeah, they did such a good job with Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, people keep trying to get me into Magic, and I told them all Hasbro has to do, or I guess Wizards of the Coast, is give me a Power Rangers set, and I'll be there. The deck doesn't even have to be good, man.
I mean, that's kind of how I am with the Lord of the Rings one, except mine's actually kind of good.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure it will be good, because Wizards of the Coast seems to just want to make every set good when it comes out. Which is kind of the opposite of Pokemon, which is fine. Honestly, I prefer the way I honestly prefer the way Pokemon does it, to be fair.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to feel like I have to buy every set. Like with Obsidian Flames, I was like, I could probably skip this one and not have to really buy
cards.
Yeah. I don't need that much from this deck or from this set. And, so I prefer it that way, but yeah, I would get hooked into Magic if they make the Power Rangers set, which I think is, honestly inevitable. If Magic doesn't die, I think it's inevitable. They did Transformers. I feel like it's just inevitable.
And they did announce a ton of crossover things like that for the next like, 2 years that are coming out.
Yeah.
Like I know next month the Doctor Who one comes out and some of those cards are really good flavor-wise.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's just a matter of time, I feel like. We'll see.
You've got till 2025, unless they sneak in a surprise set of Power Rangers in there somewhere, because I think that's about as far out as they announced it.
Well, that's about when I would expect the reboot for Power Rangers to happen, so...
There you go!
So it might be at the same time, who knows?
Yeah, but one of my favorite things about being able to like write in Elvish, my reading is really slow with it.
Yeah.
But one of the things that was kind of fun to do walking around the Dragon Con vendors for hours... was seeing the spots where there was just something like this product has Elvish written on it and reading it. And it's just,
it's the Chinese tattoo.
It's his chicken soup or something like that.
Yeah.
There was one shop in one spot that had like a whole bunch of wood stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know if they didn't realize it, but it was the ring inscription, except it was backwards.
Oh my
so,
gosh.
If you didn't know, you don't know, but I see it and it immediately sticks out. That's flipped. Like, you turned the thing wrong on the overhead projector, it's just mirrored that way.
Yeah, I know what backwards. You mean. That's probably how they did it too. They probably flipped it accidentally when they did the inscription somehow. So like I see things like this happen. Like Wormwood Gaming used to do around Valentine's Day, they would do these vaults, dice vaults for D&D, and they would always inscribe it in Elvish, and they would always make a big deal about how they're getting it like professionally translated by this person into Tolkien Elvish and everything. And all I would think about every time they would promote it, I'd be like, you didn't even have to get this person, because I would not know any different if you
would.
You would,
and I would not buy it because it's. I have done that with some things, like, oh yeah, this is this. That is not a phrase. I would not buy from anything else either. Not only this, but anything else, because you're trying to hoodwink.
It was a really cool promotion. It was not a promotion. Yeah. It was a Kickstarter, because like you could just request any text you wanted, and they would translate it to Elvish.
Nice. Okay.
And then they would put it on the vault.
I've helped some of my friends with tattoos. I mean, is this probably... right? Yeah, that's right. No, you need to move this. Like,
yeah. Oh, man, that's hilarious.
I've also got just some statements written on my whiteboard at my desk at work. And it's always fun when I'm in processing someone into our program and everything. You know, I've got a couple things I've got to do on the computer. They're kind of finishing up their paperwork. They glance around my office to kind of pass time. They see the whiteboard. I see them see the whiteboard. I see them try to figure out what language that is. Sometimes they ask, is that Arabic?
It is pretty close. It is pretty close, actually, the script. But
in my 2 years in that particular office room with that little gimmick going, one person has been like, is that Elvish?
Out of how many?
What is it? Probably a couple hundred.
Okay.
So one. 1%.
Oh, that's funny.
And then if they ask, like, I'll tell them what it all says. It's just like show in book quotes. Like, I think one of is that one from Futurama where it's like, if you do things right, people won't be sure you've done anything at all.
Yes.
I like that quote. There's one from Subnautica, which is one of the things that the PDA tells you when you first make your habitat. And it is a good reminder for me to keep work-life balance. It's treat this as your home, but never forget that it is not.
Yeah, I like that, actually.
Yeah.
I like that a lot.
That's one of my favorite random quotes, and it's meant to be tongue-in-cheek on Subnautica, but gosh dang it, is it a good one for work-life balance?
It definitely is. Oh my gosh, that's a good one. I mean, I do that already, but that's very good. Well, I think this has been long. I don't know. I don't know.
It's you and me, so it feels like it's been 5 minutes, but also an hour. Like,
this happens. This does happen a lot, actually.
Yeah, that's just how it goes.
Like the drive to and from Indianapolis, Fort Wayne was not bad at all. Yeah. That was not bad at all.
No. How long was that? Like,
that's like
it was a couple hours, right?
Yeah, to my house from there, it's probably like two and a half hours. Like probably, it's somewhere in between there. And it's not a bad drive, honestly. Like, it's not a bad drive.
You just
drive.
Get on one road and then you get off when you're there.
Yeah, it's like two roads and you're there for the
most
part.
Kind of like my drive to your house, honestly.
Yeah, it's really weird when I think about it. Like, we're really not that far away. I think it's like, what, 8 hours? A little less, I think.
Yeah,
between
about
us.
Yeah, I think I clocked it at 8 with no stops.
Yeah, it's very close to that, which is actually kind of weird to think about.
I just think it's really funny that we talk about the same highway.
I know.
That's what's funny to me.
That's true. Yeah, it's very weird. It's very, very weird. But yeah, I don't know.
How's your end of that one? Oh, it's real clogged. Oh, funny. It is down here, too.
Yeah. I try not to take it when I can. I think I've almost died. I think I've almost died in Dayton, Ohio on 75 more times than I've ever almost died in Columbus, Ohio.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I've almost been forced off that road so many times. Mostly in the downtown section. The downtown section is really awful, in my opinion, because it's been under construction. Uh-huh. I remember when I was...
forever.
Well, so like I went to the University of Dayton for undergrad. So like I've been in Dayton for a while. Well, in and out of Dayton. like I moved, quote unquote. I hate saying moved for college because it's kind of true, but like not. I don't know. College is just living away from home with training wheels.
For most.
And when you go to like something like this, right? It's just like living from home with training wheels when you live on campus. And
totally.
So like I moved on campus and. I went to visit the university in 2009, like early 2009, and there was just like a bunch of construction right at downtown Dayton, for 75. And That that corridor of 75, I kid you not, has been under construction for like the past 13 or 14 years at this point. It's been really bad.
Yep. Same down here, but then again, really I'm in Atlanta, and our joke is that Atlanta is an hour away from us, so
that's just how it goes. For a lot of those cities, it's very true. It's very weird to think about city size, because like, even if you think about population size, I don't know where Atlanta ranks in terms of population size in the U.S., but I'm going to look this up, actually.
Heck yeah.
I want a list of cities by population. the reason I bring this up is because in like Columbus, Ohio is apparently like the 15th largest city in the U.S.
Wow. Okay.
And I lived there for a very long time, for 5 years. I guess I shouldn't say very long time, but half a decade.
And once you moved out, it became the 16th.
Yeah, exactly. But I like Columbus, and I firmly believe that you can get anywhere in Columbus within 20 minutes. As long as you're in Columbus, which is very weird to think about. It's very, very weird to think about. So I want to look this up.
Atlanta is gigantic, and every street is named Peachtree something.
Yeah, I just want to know what Atlanta's name or like population
Atlanta.
What number it ranks at. So Columbus is still 14th as of 2020, based on whatever they're calling it. I should say. And let me look up Atlanta. Atlanta ranks 38th for some reason. So that's the kind of thing, because I'm like, Columbus was very easy to get around. Atlanta's not the only city that would have ranked underneath Columbus that I've heard is hard to get around. And it's probably because there's some metric that they use that isn't exactly like, because I try to use the metros when I can. And I think honestly, it's just that the Atlanta metro is just so much bigger, right? You probably have a bunch of smaller cities that got absorbed into suburbs.
Probably, yeah.
And that's probably what happened.
285 has probably just become de facto.
And like Columbus, what happened is everybody like spread out from the inside, if that makes sense. So
we've got kind of a line of demarcation around the city that tells us where Atlanta is allowed to be and not allowed to be.
Yeah, that's what I imagine happened for that. So it's probably like not everything's technically Atlanta, but you're in Atlanta effectively.
But it is.
Yeah, I mean the same thing happens with like Chicago, right?
Yeah,
because like Chicago, a lot of people it's an hour to get into Chicago for a lot of people that live in Chicago, quote unquote, and that's just because it's so spread out and not everybody lives like pretty exactly in Chicago. My favorite suburb of Chicago, that it's a city that's not in Chicago, but is like in the Chicago metro, right? Mm-hmm. That confuses everybody, is called West Chicago. There's just there's an entirely different city or town called West Chicago. And
just for peak confusion.
And it is a 40-minute train ride to downtown from West Chicago. Yeah. Yeesh. Like that's how big Chicago is. So it's probably something similar, I imagine, in Atlanta, because Columbus is ranking above places like Seattle and stuff like this on this list, which I find shocking, because like I've been to both cities and spent a lot of time in both cities, and Seattle is definitely bigger than Columbus. it's definitely bigger. Like there's no way that you could be like, yeah, Columbus is smaller, but that's because like when you think Seattle, you're also thinking of like Bellevue and Kirkland, which technically aren't Seattle.
Exactly. Yeah. It's that whole thing.
And it's because that's what happens with like Atlanta and stuff like that. I kind of wish they would put that in, I guess, instead of just saying largest city of population with population.
Yeah.
Because I think it should be, instead of population, number of people that depend on this place to exist. Right.
All I care about is that Atlanta was able to absorb me and 80,000 of my closest friends last weekend for Dragon Con. So
that's good. Yeah, dude, that place
okay
that,
enough.
Dragon Con's huge.
Yeah, I think it's the biggest on the East Coast as far as like nerd cons go.
Man, maybe I should go one day.
Adam Savage was there this year. He hadn't been back in 10 years, and it was real interesting for them to go through, you know, with the writer actor strike going on.
Oh yeah.
That made it interesting on panels. I didn't
because they can't talk about anything. They can't talk
exactly
about anything.
Depending on who they are, they can't talk about certain projects. Yeah. And so, you know, Adam Savage would be there and he'd be like, yo, yeah, when I help do things for the movie that has episode numbers with a boy who grows up to be magic, drove a car, dark side, light side, you know, things like that. When I did that, and they ended up calling it SAG Libs instead of Mad Libs. It was great. I love it.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, that checks out.
Other than the gift that it gave me. But
yeah, yes, know. The gift.
COVID 2.0, baby.
Baby. Man,
you know what?
You're getting COVID.
On the bright side, though, I had not really fully decided on what deck I was going to play at Pittsburgh, so it kind of worked out.
For the record, neither did I. I just pulled the gun because I was like, I don't want to play mirrors. And so, like, I'm just going to play this Palkia deck that Seth sent me. And I played a bit with it, and I'm like, I understand how it works for the most part. I definitely could. There were definitely places where I could have played better. Like, I definitely had round one, but I made a misplay because I haven't been playing a lot. And then I just got tired of just playing Gardevoir's decks, honestly. I played two of them, and I was just like, I'm just done. Because the same thing happened where the guy, like, went, like, ties aren't good for anybody. And I was just like, man, is this just like what's going
to
happen?
You're right, so play faster.
I'm like, this is what's going to happen every week. And I wanted to be like, yeah, that's your fault for playing Gardevoir. Like, I don't, like, I don't
when
know.
Your
what
turn takes 10 minutes. Like,
it's your fault for playing Gardevoir. I in retrospect, I should have, because like the second Gardevoir was taking so long when it was like, ties don't help anybody. You're right. It was taking so long that I should have just like, I started playing faster game two to try to be nice so we could finish game two. Because I was just trying to definitively close it out, but I ended up losing game two. Game one was really good. I told you about it. Game one, I had full control because game one, like you can, I feel bad too, like playing him because he obviously hadn't played enough because so many people play against that Palkia deck and like the Gardevoir players I played, both of them that I played game one did not respect the Greninja.
Yep.
They just did not respect it, and they didn't put the Manaphy on the bench, even though they had it in the deck. They had it in the deck, and so...
Lost City, pop.
Lost City.
Not two guards. Two currently are gone.
Two Ralts were just immediately, like, turn two, I pulled off the Lost City Gren. Immediately, beautiful. Two Ralts were just in the Lost Zone. And then I ended up knocking out a baby Gardevoir he got set up into the Lost Zone. So all he had was big boy Gardevoir. And he tried to set up the Zacian to get the Zacian going, but he didn't have enough energy in the discard because I had just started doing stuff so fast. He just left it on the bench. I bossed it up and he scooped. Like,
yep. Absolutely.
And I was just like, yeah, this is, he's just like, yeah, but game two, if I would have played normal speed, we wouldn't have finished.
Yeah, exactly.
And I just think to myself, I'm like, after watching a lot of streams too that weekend, because I hadn't been paying attention to like Worlds or NEIC when Gardevoir was active in the meta, I didn't realize how many rounds weren't completing all three games.
Yeah.
Right. And after watching the streams, I noticed how many just weren't, and how many like were even like it wasn't abnormal to just only finish one.
Yep. Absolutely.
And I was just like, I should have just played my normal pace and just won the one game and just called it a day and made him game two just play faster if he wanted to finish.
Yeah.
And I just think about I think about this all the time. Like I'm just too nice. And I was being courteous. Okay. I was trying to be courteous.
It's weird. I'm a little bit proud of myself because when I had kind of gotten through all the tasks, got my packing done and was going to sit down and do a couple test rounds.
Yeah.
The deck that I was testing for a couple before I really started to kind of feel the symptoms stacking and was like, I know this. I need to go take a test and confirm that this is what I think it is. Was basically, you know, five or so cards off the one that ended up winning the Lost Zone Kyogre list.
Yeah.
I was about to switch to that because it was just so much more fun, so much easier.
Yeah.
And had I gone to a tournament and performed well with a Kyogre that my brother kicked my butt with one time and never let me go, I told him afterwards, like, hey, did you hear that a Kyogre deck won Pittsburgh? And he's like, of course it did. It's the most powerful Pokemon card that's ever been printed. So.
Anyway, the Kyogre didn't even do anything in the finals match, to be fair.
It's a threat, though. I want to play it now.
It didn't do anything in the finals.
I might play that for Peoria.
It might work. It might work for Peoria.
Yeah.
I'm
testing Lost Zone Gudra, too.
Like, dude, no. I legit, like, I have no tournaments upcoming. I'm going to turn into a local player. but the I think I might just start taking Lost Gudra to locals.
I think it's a lot better than when we did something with it because we have the option for Zamazenta.
We technically had the option for Zamazenta back then too, to be fair.
Did we?
Yeah, Zamazenta was legal in Fort Wayne.
Oh, well, never mind. What
because,
do I know?
Because I totally played one.
Oh,
in okay. a Lost Box matchup. I won a lot of Lost Box Whoops. Matchups that day because that was like, that was, I don't know, it, like that regional I can equate to like the regional I went to in, what's it called? In 2018 when I was playing VGC.
Oh,
where,
yeah,
like,
yeah,
where
yeah.
like everything clicked, all the pieces clicked at the same time.
It all just,
and I was like the best version of myself.
and we've been chasing that ever since.
Yeah, and because like as much as like the day after, I was like, I want nothing to do with Gudra. I want nothing to do with Gudra because after nine rounds, your brain is just mush, and you don't want to do it anymore. And I mean, I chalk up a lot of the not success of that weekend to one, me being too nice in the final round and giving the win to the other guy because I would have had points if I wouldn't have. And then also. Just like the luck of the tournament matchups.
That like, is a big factor.
Like I hit a lot of Arc Duraludons.
Yeah.
Like I hit hard. I hit three. And that's not it's not that it's an unwinnable matchup for that deck. It's just that you're playing the same game.
And your entire gimmick of playing Gudra goes out the window.
Yeah. I mean you're playing the same game as the Duraludon deck, essentially.
Yeah.
And so you're both just big fat decks that are stalling things out. And when you do it to each other, it's literally just like who smacks first.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really what that matchup comes down to. I think that a Raldon deck has a slight advantage only because it has the option to force an 8-prize game.
Yeah.
And the Gudra deck has not that option at all. But I think Gudra is better against other decks than Duraludon is, but
yeah, exactly. But yeah, we'll see. Yeah, that is a lot we'll to see. Test, and 151 comes out. So
well, this interview just turned into us making a podcast about ourselves. Again.
it kind of did.
This is
oh well.
This is what this turns. I mean, bonus TCG episode for the people back home, I guess.
Woo!
Or for the patrons, I guess. Yeah,
exactly.
I came up with the name for the show, by the way, while we've been talking.
Oh, perfect.
This is Puckle's Chit Chat.
Puckle's Chit Chat.
I like it. I think it'll work. I think we'll do it. I think that'll work. So yeah. Puckle's Chit Chat episode one. We got that in the books now. I appreciate you taking the time to just talk to me for an hour tonight.
Absolutely. And you know what? I appreciate doing it. I
know. I was just know. Like this is also just to force you guys to come talk to me more often too. So
yeah. And, you know, I love talking to you. I love talking to the patrons. I love kind of just able to explain me as a person without necessarily the context to Pokemon. Like
yeah,
other
this has
things.
No rules. This
it's
has
fun.
No rules. This show has no rules. It's literally just like it's our friendship on display, if that makes sense. So
you saw me in a coffee shop and you sat down and what's going on with you? Oh well.
Hey buddy. Yeah, exactly. So I hope to do more of these and I'm looking forward to do it with other people, but obviously I feel like we should just do this more often. Like,
yeah,
at least get everybody on when we're done with everybody else. We just get together and chit chat about whatever's
make
going
it
on.
Cyclical.
Honestly, yeah, I'm not against it though.
See you in 8 months or whatever.
Yeah. See you whenever we get through. We run out of people.
Yeah. So, I love it. That's great.
All right. Well, everybody at Patreon land, this has been your first episode of Puckle's Chit Chat. Puckle's Chit Chat. I want to get like the old radio style. Where you just get like, you know, three women in harmony just going Puckle's Chit Chat or something.
Googling Fiverr.
Yeah,
old-timey singer.
It's totally happening.
Give me a barbershop quartet stat.
Puckle's Chit Chat. Can you write
Puckle's
a song?
Puckle's Chit Chat. Puckle's Chit Chat.
That's what we need, honestly.
Chit Chat.
Wow, we just made a podcast. So
there it is.
That is it for Puckle's Chit Chat, though, guys. I'm going to end the show before Seth and I just keep going on and on about something else.
How long can we vamp?
We could do this for 2-3 hours, honestly. But we're going to end it here. And we're going to call that the first episode of Puckle's Chit Chat. I've been Thatch interviewing Seth Vilo over there in the corner. And here at Puckle Chit Chat Land, I guess it's closing time. We need a different outro, but it's closing time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.